Brian, I want to talk about the blobs. I want to talk about how Optimism's using the blobs. I want to talk about how Starkness using the blobs. Arbitrum is using the blobs in a very special way, so we're going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about the blobs. We're going to talk about blob space. We're going to talk about the blob contention. There's a new phrase just dropped, blob contention. Gets me all, like, hot and bothered. I'm pretty psyched about blobs, Ryan. I can't talk to you enough about
blobs.
Well,
this is going to turn into a blobcast, I could tell. Bankless Nation! It's the third week of March.
Blob week. It's blob week. The blob week of March. Blobs everywhere.
Yeah, Dave, we got to talk about the blobs because this is Ethereum shipping an absolutely major upgrade. Would you say this is the biggest upgrade since the merge? Biggest upgrade
ever? The second
ever?
Biggest upgrade ever. The biggest one being the merge. Yeah, now we have blob space on Ethereum, in addition to some other cool stuff that is in the Ethereum protocol now, is really EIP 4844 that is now fully a part of the Ethereum protocol, enshrining blob space into the protocol itself, allowing layer twos to become super fast. All the layer twos are celebrating and boasting their super speedy, super quick, super cheap transactions. Transactions across the Optimistic rollups right now, like even some of the more
so
complex
cheap
stuff, are 0 cents.
Oh my God.
They are 0 cents.
Feels so good.
Will it last is the big question. Is this just a short blip in time on blob space, or is this going to be the new meta in Ethereum layer twos?
That's a good question for sure. So we're going to talk about all of that. Also, Bitcoin hit another all-time high this week. Mm-hmm. A legit David Hoffman all-time high.
That's right.
You cannot dispute
That's
this
right.
all-time high. Uh-huh. Are you capitulating, right? Bitcoin all-time high.
I'm not capitulating. I'm declaring the all-time high has been hit by
all
Bitcoin.
Right, it passed David's line, okay?
We're at like $73,000 or something.
Also, ETH tipped over 4K. We're going to talk about that. Also, I want to talk to you, too, about the wider context of this. Like, where are we in the cycle? How early is
it? The forever question.
And also, are we going to get this Ethereum ETF? A bit of banter on that. Justin Drake says yes.
Other people say no. Ethereum is getting its first restaked layer two, another layer two on Ethereum, as if we needed any more. Just kidding. We need all of them. But it's a layer two with new superpowers. Who is building it? What to expect? Also, some things in the Solana world. Tensor has announced their token. It's one of the biggest protocols on Solana. Is basically the Blur for Solana. Very hyped. They're getting their token. Jito on Solana also getting rid of its mempool. Turns out Solana discovers MEV is a thing. And also a crypto project is going to be on the Vegas Sphere. So maybe that, Ryan, answers a little bit about where we are in this cycle. And then also the Bankless Podcast gets its fourth birthday ever. So something special for Bankless Podcast enjoyers. It's not the only birthday on the podcast today. Ryan, sup?
What? Is it my birthday today?
I don't know.
You noticed?
That's a question to you, brother.
I have a question for you. Okay, so a mysterious package arrived on my front porch this morning, okay? And it was addressed to not Ryan Sean Adams. It was addressed to Ryan Dad Adams, okay?
And
I thought to myself, who in the world would do this? Like, it looks like it was a package from Herman Miller. I was like, did one of my kids see that? And like, no, my kids can't afford a Herman Miller piece of furniture. Like, what is this? So I brought it inside, still like having no idea who actually sent me this. But I'm thinking, David, and we haven't talked about this yet, I'm thinking it may have been you. And what awaits me in that package is a brand new chair.
Can you show the podcast viewers the chair that you have been sitting on
4 years
since the inception of this goddamn company? Take a step back and show just like the absolute lack of lumbar support that this fucking stool has.
David,
this is like, for the podcast listeners, this is like a counter height stool for your kitchen.
It's a running thing.
Just like took from somewhere else in his house and he's like, oh, I need a chair for my office. And he has not invested in his lumbar spine whatsoever.
That's literally how it happened. This is just a chair from another place in my house.
For four years.
We talked about this. You've been absolutely incredulous. You've been like,
it's
Ryan,
ridiculous.
When are you getting a new chair? When are you going to do this? So you just sent me one. Thanks, man. I appreciate this. So what am I getting? What awaits me in the package?
It's a Herman Miller M-Body chair. It's the one that I use. It is a very fun chair. You get to bounce around on it. It like curves up your spine. You get to sit on it all day. I don't know how your spine doesn't hurt.
That's expensive. You spend some money on this, David. It must be a bull market.
It was a company expense.
Oh. All right.
That would have a company
credit
card.
Well, thanks for spending our money. I appreciate that for my spine. I'm sure my spine appreciates that as well.
Oh, my God.
I appreciate it. Hey, no. I want to talk one more thing with you because this is in your apartment. All right. This is the plant wall. Tell us about the plant wall. I'm showing it on screen.
Happy birthday, Ryan. Oh. And happy birthday from the Bankless Nation.
Thanks for the chair, Bankless Nation.
Thanks for the
appreciate
chair.
That. All right, so what are we looking at here? I have noticed in your background some on kind of the left side,
it's
my left.
Kind of green, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting a bit more green. And I remember in the 2021 cycle, like you were in your San Diego apartment, it just kept getting more and more green every day that we would do a podcast until your entire back, like part of your apartment was covered with plants.
Yeah, you actually
are you doing this again?
Yeah, slightly off camera, actually. So there's some plants that have made it on camera, but you can see the wall of plants that is just to the left of the reason why this became relevant is because me and Ryan were prepping for the show this morning, and then my circuit breaker pops, and I just go completely dark. And it's because, like, I have these studio lights for podcasting for whenever I want to do an in-person podcast, but they are also, like, very powerful plant grow lights. And so I have them like turned on and pointed to my plants because like, why the hell not? But then they're also really hot and it's a solid 69 degrees in New York right now. Nice. And my apartment gets very, very sunny. And so I had to turn on my air conditioning in, what is it, March? And so between the grow lights and the air conditioning and my computer, the circuit breaker pops. And I just like disappeared on Ryan during prep for the show.
Yeah, that's you're in a negative flywheel there. If you have more plants, more lights, more heat, more air conditioning, more electricity, these things could keep happening, David. Anyway, I'm really excited about your plant collection, and I want to.
I'm really excited about your chair.
Cool. We'll keep the Bankless Nation updated on those two things.
Also, plants and chairs. Yeah.
Speaking of updates, can you tell them about Primed Steak, our friends and sponsors over at Primed Steak? This is a restaking protocol. Pretty exciting. What are they up to?
Yeah, brand new spiffy LRT protocol on the horizon. Prime Staked, of course, it gives you liquidity for your assets that you deposit into EigenLayer, so you can convert your staked ETH into Prime ETH. Prime Staked, like Prime Stake, like your
Prime Red logo here,
of course.
Yeah.
So you get your EigenLayer points, you get your ETH staking yield, you also get Prime ETH XP points, which are of course the points for Prime ETH. And so if you want to catch up on some EigenLayer points, you can get 156 bonus EigenLayer points per ETH deposited into Prime Staked. If you want to try out this new LRT protocol and catch up on some EigenLayer points as well. There's a link in the show notes. This is Eigen Bonus Week starting on the 18th of this month, which is in 3 days. And so there's a link in the show notes in order to get started.
And this is the part where I gotta just mention, of course, restaking protocols are brand new. And so they are a little further on the risk spectrum. So keep that in mind as you think about restaking in any restaking protocol. All right, David, tell us about Bitcoin all-time highs, because we have officially crossed David Hoffman's bar to all-time highs. Mm-hmm. Thank you for tweeting that at me. I appreciated knowing from you that we had hit Bitcoin all-time highs. I think it happened maybe sometime Sunday, something like this.
Yeah, it was on Sunday.
All right, it was officially right on Sunday, now on the week?
Currently at 71,200, started the week at 67,400, up 5.5, a modest 5.5% on the week. Did you know, Ryan, that actually we've had one red week in the last 7 weeks, and it was only a down 1% week that week? We are up 70% on Bitcoin in 7 weeks. On the note of calling all-time highs, I did think this one YouTube comment from last week was pretty funny, which is like, maybe the guy who doesn't own any Bitcoin doesn't get to call when the Bitcoin all-time highs are.
You
which
know, you
I do understand. I do take that point.
Bankless owns Bitcoin, unless you spend all of it on my chair here. But we still have some Bitcoin. So by proxy, you own Bitcoin. Okay, well, that's exciting. So we are in uncharted territory. Bitcoin's been going up only. This is why people are actually asking, are we going to have a reversion to some local mean here?
Right.
Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit. But another thing to celebrate is Bitcoin actually surpassed the market cap, the total value of silver this week. It's down
and then
a hair
fell
below.
Back down below it.
Oh, but look at this. Neck
It'll
and
get
neck.
There. It'll get One, there. So silver is a thing of the past and like next week.
Well, silver is 1.4 trillion and Bitcoin is 1.4 trillion as well. So silver must just have a decimal edge here.
Silver has 80 million more dollar market cap than Bitcoin.
Wow. The number two asset. So I guess Bitcoin is gold, silver then. And Litecoin has nothing to do with this, huh, David?
That's right. Well, Litecoin has always been irrelevant. It's just taken time for the market to realize that.
This is Dan McArdle, keeping receipts as always. He says this: they tried to tell you Bitcoin outperformance was a one-time thing due to 0% and government stimulus checks, but this is the long-term scoreboard. Look at all of that green, David. This is year by year Bitcoin returns versus gold versus S&P 500. And if you kind of compare it, that's a 14-year return of 2.4 billion% on Bitcoin.
We have some measurement subjectivity going on here, but the point still stands that like Bitcoin has been the greatest investment compared to all traditional investments since its inception.
Yeah, over the past decade,
really,
for sure.
It only was really bad if you got in at 2017, 2021, and maybe in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just missed out on, I think, once-in-a-lifetime gains by just fading crypto too early and thinking it's a meme, think it's a scam, think it's a Ponzi. The tulip mania thing has cost a lot of people a lot of money, mm-hmm. I would say. Let's flip over to ETH. We're on the Kraken charts as usual. What's ETH looking like on the week?
ETH starting the week at 38.40, up 1%, up $40 on the week. You know, actually, ETH price action was more exciting than that really accounts for. Like, we got up to $4,200, $4,100.
Yeah.
But we are basically down around full circle to where we started the week, $3,880.
Well, that above 4K, I mean, 4K is kind of a round number here. We haven't been that high since, like, for 2 years. It's been over 2 years since we've seen that.
ETH has spent very little time above $4,000.
Yeah, look at this. Like a brief period in May, it looks like May 2021, and then a brief period between November 21.
Into January.
So can I ask you, so we can have consensus on this, David, what is the ETH all-time high number? When will you celebrate hitting ETH all-time highs?
I think the true accurate number is somewhere in the 4,900, low 4,900s ish, if I remember correctly, like high 488, low 49,000. But it's really, we got to go for the round numbers. So it was 70,000 for Bitcoin, 5,000 for ETH. Once it hits 5,000, it gets unequivocal. Like we've hit a new round number.
So you're playing hard mode. You don't want to call a specific, you know, 4,800, something like this. By the way, that's CoinGecko all-time high price, 4,850 or something like this. Uh-huh. You want to just square it up to 5K and then you celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I don't mind. Five number. Come on, the new all-time high is going to be something like 15, 20K. So I'm not going to just like get excited about the difference between $4,880 and 5,000. I'm just going to go for 5,000.
15 to 20K. Wow, dude. Yeah. I can't wait for that. Look at this. This is global crypto market cap. We are at 2.82 trillion.
Moving fast.
And this is like getting close to all-time highs.
Yeah.
So look at this. We hit 3 trillion. Just very briefly, 3 trillion. Yep. We're almost there.
We're basically there, yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Does this worry you? Does it feel like it's happening too soon?
No, I'm not worried generally about frothiness or anything until I will start to be worried about like the teeteringness of the market and the paper gains of the market after ETF inflows stop being insane. Until further notice, you are allowed to be as bullish as you want to be until the ETF flows like wean. And there's no sign of them weaning whatsoever.
So how far are we in the bull market, do you think? I mean, are we entering into the second half, would you say? Are we still in the first half? Or are we like, are we actually top signaling and, you know, things are kind of like starting to flash?
The thing is, like, we got 1 year of top signals from 2021 to 2022.
Yeah.
And there were still plenty of like gains to be made after top signal started to come. I had the same conversation with Micah Bolito on the podcast not too long ago. When we were like, it was the beginning of the fourth inning about is kind of what we said.
Halfway
but it also really depends on when you started counting the bull market. And I think we are in the beginning of the fourth inning if you count like a very early bull market and it's a very long game. I think really the Jito airdrop on Solana and then the Solana DeFi summer is kind of like the soft official, unofficial launch of the bull market. If anyone can really put any date on it. But I think this thing could like kind of it, like if the ETH ETF gets approved by November, of which the odds are still pretty good. I don't care what anyone says. Like that's just good continuation of more flows into crypto. And the ETH ETF, the Bitcoin ETF flows like, have potentially a ton of life in them, like potentially like 3 to 6 more months of net new buyers from different corners of TradFi coming in to buy Bitcoin. And so that has a ton of life and energy left in it. And so like, to me, I'm calling for like an idea is like, you have like 6 to 9 months where like, we have like free paper gains because of all these inflows into the ETFs and everyone is speculating downstream. That being said, it doesn't matter how strong the fundamentals are. If there's too much total net paper gains in crypto, that will end the bull market because people will take the chips off the table and selling will beget selling. And all of a sudden we'll discover a bear market.
I am terrible at timing these things, David, but I feel like we have at least 12 months left. And again, I could be wrong.
Right.
And I feel like $3 trillion is not the top in terms of total crypto market cap.
Oh, hell no.
Like, I think we're getting to 10. Now, what could happen is we could like spike up to like 3 or like 4 or 5 and then tank all the way back down, like even below 3 and like people, you know, below 2 again. And people could think that that was the top and we're headed back down. You know, but like, I think we'll have multiple cycles of different top signals. And this is just kind of like the first class of top signals. Yeah. David,
I think a longer, grander bull market because of an ETF flows is like a reasonable base case.
Let's talk a little bit about layer twos. I know our next section is going to be completely about blob space, layer twos, how cheap the gas fees are. You're going to get sick of hearing it from
we're
us.
We're talking about Ethereum in this weekly roll-up. It's Ethereum roll-up.
But before we get there, that's going to be in the next section. Let's just gander at total locked value because we are up on the week and there are some pretty big movers, including Base is up significantly on the week to $1.4 billion. On Base and total value locked.
That's pretty good. Yeah, we had $38 billion inside of layer twos. I think that's actually stayed about the same week over week. We are teasing 10 million in layer twos in ETH terms, ETH denominated. Yeah, Base has really had a killer week, but overall, like layer twos are always kind of just up. Just kind of to spit out some of the numbers just to give people an anchor point. Arbitrum, 15.6 billion. Optimism, 8.9 billion. Blast, insane, 2.8 billion. Some really good healthy numbers here. But yeah, the big outperformer right now is Base. Blasting its way with plus 25% week over week to $1.4 billion.
Layer 2 Beat added a new tab here where you can see where the chain itself, the layer 2 is storing its data. You know, what data availability solution is it using? Is it using Ethereum mainnet or is it using something else? And, you know, some are enshrined like Arbitrum, OP, some like Manta Pacific. There's really no DA bridge and others are using like Celestia and other third parties for this. So, layer two Beat always kind of showing us the way here and showing us what's up with these layer twos. By the way, thanks to Mantle for sponsoring this section, which is one of our favorite L2s of this cycle and a sponsor of this show.
Especially as Eigenlayer AVSs come online and make layer twos better. That's like been Mantle's deal for a long time. A lot of people don't really realize. Mantle actually has been working with Eigenlayer on EigenDA. They're going to be the first ones to leverage EigenDA. And we're going to really see what 10 megabytes a second of data throughput can really do for a layer two.
You know, this recurring theme we've been talking about the last couple of weeks is retail here? This is Eric Conner saying, yes, they are here. That is retail. They just aren't in Bitcoin and Ether. And he's looking at Google search index for meme coins. Mm-hmm. And it is just a spike absolutely up. Yeah, the clip that we played, the TikTok dude that we played last week, he was talking about some meme coin. He's definitely not talking about the fundamentals of Bitcoin and Ether. What do you think about this, David? Do you think retail's here? They're just buying meme coins instead of buying like, our bags with great fundamentals?
Yeah, I think maybe even at this point, like retail, quote unquote retail outside of crypto has heard of Bitcoin enough times where they're like, that's just not cool anymore. You know what's cool? A dog with a hat. I'm going to buy that thing or Joe Bowden or whatever. Some nihilist financial stuff. Cause I think with like a lot of retail who comes like speculating and degenning, like they're not taking like their entire savings and putting it into like dog with hat. They're putting like, amount of money that they can be nihilist about. And like see if it goes to zero, whatever. And I'm trying to like shoot for the moon and Bitcoin is just not going to do that for them anymore. So I think it makes sense that retail skips straight to meme coins. I mean, like they all saw JPEGs, tokens with JPEGs last cycle. So why don't they just go even more degen?
You know, it's crazy, David. This is a tweet from Franklin Templeton, like the bank, you know, Franklin Templeton, the asset manager. And this is a report on the value between meme coins and their narrative networks. This is kind of like a bullish report on meme coins.
Oh my God.
From Franklin Templeton. You believe that?
Wow. Yeah,
I thought you'd find that interesting, right? They're catching a bid from the institutions as well.
What the hell?
another what the hell moment. David, it's happening. So Dog with Hat is potentially going on the Vegas Sphere. And there was a fundraise this week. I think they made the fundraise.
Yeah.
So apparently this will be what looks like the first crypto project on the Vegas Sphere. And David,
from a long time
you coming. And I pinned this as like, this could be an absolute top signal for the cycle. It's the first crypto project, just like the FTX stadium of the past, the first crypto project that is on a Sphere. That's a top signal. And we were joking around, like, it's time to sell.
At some point, there was also a race to get your crypto project on the Sphere. And, like, when I kind of made my tweet, like, the first crypto project to get their project on the Sphere loses, I actually didn't really consider, like, crowdsourced meme coins as, like, one of the ways to race to get there. I kind of was thinking about, like, some semi-legit startup, layer one, brand new layer one, Ethereum killer on the scene, advertises themselves. Like, a legitimate attempt at advertising.
I know, but
this
still
is a farce attempt at advertising. Like, it's for the lulz, it's for the memes, and I wasn't really accounting for that.
It's
so
gonna
I am
count,
not
though.
Counting. I'm not counting this top signal.
That's the problem with top signals, is once they come, you just find a way to justify it. You're just like, eh, it's not really a top signal.
As soon as I see an ETH killer on the Vegas Sphere, that is it. That's the top signal.
I don't know. I worry we're moving goalposts here in this bull market.
This happened
a lot earlier than I thought. I'll say that. But yeah, it's not that expensive to actually put your project on the Vegas Sphere, at least in crypto terms. $650K. So maybe our top
signal
calibration.
$650K worth of Dog with Hat donations had to be made. So that people are just giving away their Dog with Hat money in order to make this happen.
But because
so
it's
like
a meme.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, because it's a meme, it's going to like increase the, you know, the price of Dog with Hat, like, I don't know, fivefold or tenfold, you know, just getting this kind of press. So there's good ROI for people to do that.
I don't think it'll do that. I think it's more for the lulz.
You're doing an entire episode on meme coins, which I am disappointed to have to miss. But I want to get your take high level on meme coins. Like, some people think that they're like fun, that mm-hmm. this is what crypto is all about. Other people think that they're toxic. I guess my take is, I think they're fun. I think that I get annoyed at them when they start to suck all of the oxygen out of the room, and like they get all of the attention,
when
and
they,
this is
when
what
they
crypto
become
becomes
the point.
But otherwise, I don't want to be a purist. Like, I don't like participate in many of these things, but it's just like, whatever, people are having fun, it's fine. It's what one nice thing about it is, it's completely transparent, right? So like everyone knows it's a dog with hat.
Yes. There are things that are less transparent about meme coins, right?
Well,
like the genesis story of each one.
Exactly. So like, more private keys and more hands is good. It stress tests all of our infrastructure. That's good. Like, bad things, I do think there will be some absolutely epic scams this cycle involving meme coins, right? And everyone now thinks they can kind of you know, like, have the next meme coin. So, and there's some harm, I think, to the crypto branding as a result
as
of
a
this
whole,
that
yeah.
that could come. Like, what's your take?
Well, the meme coins are first just a very expected and acceptable byproduct of one of the great powers of crypto, which is giving people access to the money printer of financial assets. Like, any average Joe can make a financial asset, and that's the power of an ERC-20 token, it's the power SPL token on Solana or whatever you want. That's a democratizing power that is going to the people. And then, like, what did we do when we got the internet? We put pictures of cats on there. What did we do when we got access to like Web3? We made dog tokens. Like, it's just like a normal like progress of events. And so that part is good. Like, let's give power to the people, especially like, let's not like, you know, gatekeep the powers of Wall Street. Like, let's open this up. I think there is the fact that we can produce Dogecoin. Dogecoin is, to me, is an example of a good meme coin. Like good on the morality, like ethics spectrum. I think that is a good
thing. Just like fair distribution. Do you mean
totally
that
fair?
Kind of thing?
Yeah. The fact that a meme can become worth billions of dollars is like cool and neat and interesting. And it also opens up plenty of space for grifting and exploitation and extraction. And so kind of like, more or less, like, I'll take the point that like, one of the reasons why people love meme coins is like, plenty of like layer one grifts, like grifts in crypto have been abundant, and where like they have been like touting some narrative, but they're really trying to get rich. And so like all of those grifts are plenty real and plenty like throughout the history of crypto. And so to the meme coin point, it's like, well, at least these things are like honest. But I don't think that makes them any better or worse. I think it's like a natural like reflection on like human incentive and human desires. And so it's the meme coins will be as good or bad as like human greed will be. And in the bull market, human greed can get pretty bad. Yeah, it'll be pretty gnarly.
I also worry a little bit that it's not great for our financial literacy. Do you know if people think that they're investing in these things and like what's an investment? You know, like they're doing more speculative attention gambling and not like what I would call like classically investing. So that might be a bad side. But you know, back to kind of financial nihilism, right? The people say that like people think the U.S. dollar has turned into a Ponzi. The SEC won't allow our actual tokens to have real utility and cash flows. So like no wonder people are all about this right now. Anyway,
I did see one meme that I really, really liked, which was, you know, the bell curve meme, right? Like left and right curve. And then you have the person in the center, and the person in the center is like, no, you can't invest in meme coins. There's no fundamentals, like blah, 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 blah. Like
that's me sometimes.
And the left and the right curves are like, it's fun and I'm making money.
Totally.
And that's great. But the thing is that like these things are only fun because people are making money, and eventually people will not, making money will turn into losing money, and then the fun will go away. And you know what will be left in the bear market? Fundamentals.
Yeah.
As they always will be.
I will point out there is a fun in fundamentals, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There is. That is what we're here for.
David.
Although I will have to say I did purchase one meme coin. I'm the owner of one meme coin.
Well, I'm playing
in the game.
Yeah. I don't blame you for that, David. Just enjoy yourself, man. While it lasts.
I will.
US CPI rose faster than expected last month. So we're about 0.4 in February and 3.2% from a year ago. So the Fed really having a hard time getting this under 3% and getting it towards 2%. So we'll continue to monitor that as we go. Do you know, another interesting thing is the yield, the interest on our stable coins in DeFi have come back, baby, like 20 to 30%
than last year. Yeah.
And we're talking like in compound, and this is not just airdrop yield hunting. This is like actual real returns,
sustainable yield. Yeah.
In like a money market of crypto, which is sort of, you know, compound. So it's fairly low risk, all things considered. Right. And like the question Eric Voorhees is posing is, why is this happening? Do you have a take on this?
I mean, I think Hayden Adams' follow-on take was, I think, probably the best explanation. He said that crypto natives getting 30% on our yield is just like too low in bull markets when things are going 3x minimum. Like, I'm personally looking for a 3x this cycle, so I'm not going to take 30%.
Yeah.
But then also, taking your TradFi money and TradFi dollars and putting them into crypto and DeFi is like too risky for all the people that still have TradFi dollars. And so there's just like that mismatch is producing very high yields. Where the curves or the supply demand curves actually meet, and that's meeting at 30%. So this will attract outside capital. It's just like outside capital is going to be slow to move to take up some of that yield.
Speaking of yield, David, can you explain how Athena Labs got to 1 billion? This is a relatively new,
happened really fast,
Ethereum DeFi protocol. What's going on here?
So Athena, brand new stablecoin. It's not a decentralized stablecoin, but it kind of fits in the decentralized stablecoin corner of how you design a stablecoin. I need to like actually do my homework on how this works. But basically, there is a basis neutral trade that you can make where you have staked ETH on one side and the yield from staked ETH and like MEV on Ethereum, which is something like 4 or 5, 6%. And then you also have the yield of funding rates for people who are shorting Ether on a non-leveraged basis. And so like a one way short, you get funding for that. One way long, you get yield from that. You put those two together and you have a basis trade where it nets out at like a $1, but you also get yield. And so that produces a stable coin. That part of the jump, I don't understand how it makes, but it does check out. I know that it checks out. So they just crossed $1 billion. So congratulations to Athena. I did say on Twitter that if they hit $1 billion, they can do a podcast on Bankless. I guess reach out to us.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. I'm curious about it as well. This is different than the algorithmic stable coins of the past, like, yes. Terra Luna, right? It's right. Like this yield is from a legitimate source. But
yes, it is backed by real assets.
Yeah. David, let's do an ETF scan really quick, like ETF watch. Mm-hmm. We are looking at a Dune board showing all of the ETFs right now, and we've got 4.2% of current Bitcoin supply in ETFs.
It's a lot.
I mean, like, this was very low when we started a couple of months ago, and it's just shot right up.
It's gonna go to 10% by halfway through this year.
Yeah,
it's gonna be at 10% by June.
Flow since launch, 10 billion. Just the past week was almost 2 billion. So yeah, a lot of crazy things going on. And MicroStrategy versus BlackRock BTC holdings. Look at this chart, David. Dude. The blue line is BlackRock, and it's going straight
Poor
up.
Poor Michael Saylor just getting demolished by BlackRock Bitcoin inflows.
Saylor's doing fine.
I think BlackRock had its number one record inflow day. BlackRock itself had a $1 billion of inflows, if I remember that headline correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Saylor's going to return later in this episode. Got a clip that we want to play.
Yet. He's not done.
Well, so let's talk about the ETH ETF like one last time, because there's more banter back and forth on when this thing is going to actually happen. Actually, James Seifert and Eric Balchunas put out some of their estimates, and these are sort of, some people call them the Bloomberg bros. I don't know if they appreciate that, but they've been right on with respect to like understanding the Bitcoin ETF landscape. And they put out their estimates that the odds of the Ethereum ETF getting approved by May are down to 35%.
Yikes. It used to be 60%.
Used to be. This is Eric Balchunas saying, I get all the reasons they should approve it. Okay. And we personally believe they should. But all signs sources that were making us bullish for the Bitcoin spot ETF are not there this time. Note that the 35% isn't 0%. It's still possible. And long term, we think it will happen, but not by the May deadline. That's Eric Balchunas. Mm-hmm. So that carries some weight in my mind. Also, Jake Chervinsky, did you see his take here?
Yeah, he's also being in the bear camp. I think the summary of just Jake's tweet and Balchunas' tweet is like more or less like the signs of activity and interest by the SEC of engaging with the ETH ETF issuers just aren't there. It's not that they are saying they're going to not approve it, or not that they're saying that they're going to delay it. They are just doing nothing, right? It's just like indifference. Jake Chervinsky says, it brings me no joy to be an ETH ETF bear, but I'm calling it like I see it. I see an SEC that dislikes crypto as a concept, seeks to please progressive elected officials, shout out Elizabeth Warren, who want to make anti-crypto a core part of their platform. Who could that be? Has a wrong but not insane basis for denial, i.e. spot futures correlation. Now, the spot price of ETH and the futures price of ETH on the CME futures, that is like mathematically been proven to have a just as strong a correlation to the Bitcoin ETF. So this point, this line in Jake, and Jake's like reasoning, people have like in the Ethereum community has thrown, called into question. Like we actually have like totally awesome, fantastic proof that the correlation is just as strong as Bitcoin. So like, I'm not sure about that one, but like it does go back to I think just the writing, the tea leaves is really just saying like the SEC is just like not engaging with ETH ETF issuers in the same way that they were engaging with Bitcoin ETF issuers.
I think the strongest pushback against this that I've seen is, but like, BlackRock wants it. And that's what we've been saying all along. Yeah. Like, big finance is now on the side of getting these ETFs approved. And the Bitcoin ETF was so successful, they would just want to run that same play back. So Jake Chervinsky and Eric Balchunas, what about BlackRock? This is Jake's reply to that. I agree BlackRock's presence is a big deal, but ETH is a very unique asset and probably raises more legal and political controversy than any other ETF filing that BlackRock has ever done. BlackRock always wins is not a satisfactory response to all the arguments for denial, in his opinion. So,
and BlackRock could get their ETH ETF denied, and BlackRock would just like not bat an eye, and they would just reissue it until it got approved.
Oh yeah,
like the ETH ETF,
it's like, going to happen.
It's going to get
approved.
Everyone
knows this.
It's if it doesn't get approved in 2024, it'll get approved in 2025. I'm not concerned.
We're just
trying to like. People are just trying to figure out whether they should take leverage on the ETH ETF May approval or not, which you shouldn't be doing anyways.
Yeah. Well, actually, Justin Drake, who I consider an incredibly knowledgeable person, is on the side of it getting approved
May
by
approval.
May.
Yeah. And Justin Drake is an ETH May bull.
Yeah, he's thrown down a bet with Nick Carter. on whether the ETF gets approved or not. And Justin Drake, his team, it will get approved by May.
Yeah, so Nick, there is some backstory with Nick Carter bets. This is a Tungsten Cube bet. Nick Carter is famous for making bets with people across the crypto space where the stakes are one Tungsten Cube. Remember the Tungsten Cube memes from last cycle?
Yeah.
And Nick has like collected like three, maybe four Tungsten Cubes because he's always
doing
been
well.
Right.
He's doing
so
well.
He's collecting Tungsten Cubes as like, these are my the spoils of my victory. This is my plunder. And so he's made a bet with Justin Drake that if the spot ETF is denied in May or not approved in May, then Justin Drake has to give Nick Carter his Tungsten Cube.
Well, Justin Drake is not often wrong, but neither is Nick Carter. Yeah. So I guess we will see what happens with that. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, we're going to talk about blobs because I'm tired of not talking about blobs on this goddamn weekly roll up, Ryan. I want to talk about the blobs. I want to talk about how Optimism's using the blobs. I want to talk about how Starknet's using the blobs. Arbitrum is using the blobs in a very special way. So we're going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about the blobs. We're going to talk about blob space. We're going to talk about the blob contention. There's a new phrase just dropped. Blob contention gets me all like hot and bothered. I'm pretty psyched about blobs, Ryan. I can't talk to you enough about
blobs.
Well,
this is going to turn into a blob cast. I could tell. What else though? We got a brand new L2.
Layer 2 on the scene. Another one is coming online. Why is this one different? Tensor has introduced the Tensor token. We're going to talk about Jito on Solana, but mainly we're going to talk about blobs, Ryan. So let's go ahead and get right into these sponsors that make all the blobs possible on this blobcast. So let's go hear from them right now. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax obligations for providing token grants to your team? It's no secret that token management gets complicated. Between learning all the legal language and tax obligations in every country that your team is in, token grant management can feel like an obstacle course, but it doesn't have to. That's where Toku steps in. Toku provides practical tools to handle token grants, allowing for effective oversight of token distributions and payroll tax compliance for employees, contractors, advisors, and investors. They also handle tax withholding through their real-time tax calculations that can be done by Toku or integrated into any payroll EOR providers in any jurisdiction. Toku is a trusted provider of Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Protocol, and many more. Get started for free and make token compensation simple at toku.com/bankless.
Welcome back to the Bankless Blobcast.
We're
talking about the blobs are live on Ethereum mainnet. Let's set some context. So this was a major Ethereum upgrade, a hard fork that just happened. It happened on March 13th, right? Mm-hmm. So this was Wednesday of this week. It's called Denkun. Can you give us the highlights? So why was this upgrade so significant and what did it do?
So EIP 4844, which is like the shining star of the upgrade of the Denkun hard fork, is what introduces blob space to the Ethereum layer one protocol. Blob space is a specific lane of transactions that's separate from block space. So we have all the normal transactions that everyone has ever been making on Ethereum has always been going into block space. What do blockchains do? Blockchains sell blocks. Well, now the Ethereum layer one also sells blobs. And blobs is a blob is kind of is actually a technical term, believe it or not, for just like arbitrary data. We're going to package up arbitrary data and we're going to that is a blob and we're going to put that blob in the layer one blob space. Think of it like a high occupancy vehicle lane, an HOV lane for Ethereum layer two transactions. So on the Ethereum layer one currently, we're all driving in our individual cars, one car per person. It's not that efficient. And we're all having to pay high gas fees in order to do stuff on the Ethereum layer one. Even layer twos are inside of the same kind of congested lanes that all the individuals are using. Mm-hmm. Now, layer twos, because they are high occupancy vehicles, they're bundling up thousands of transactions from thousands of users. They are, instead of posting that as data inside a block space, they get to wrap that in a blob and post that into blob space. And so they all get to move faster through the carpool lanes and get from point A to point B faster for cheaper because of blob space. And so this actually is not affecting gas on the Ethereum layer one for layer one transactors. This is significantly increasing the or decreasing the fees on Ethereum layer twos. That's my summary. We've got blobs.
That's great.
We've
that's
got
great.
Blocks.
I've never heard that analogy, David, of a HOV lane, but I think that's
you know who
perfect.
Made that? Who made that analogy?
Vitalik.
No, well, maybe, but the first time I heard it was from our Josh at Bankless.
Oh, awesome.
Which made it into the actual like live stream of just like, this is the way that you explain blobs. So
that's great.
If our Josh, who's actually the guy listening to this, editing this podcast right now, if he made that, well done. It has become enshrined as like the best metaphor to explain blob space.
Well, shout out Josh. Thank you. And, here's another metaphor. This is one that Chris Dixon uses, and this is kind of an internet metaphor. So this upgrade essentially made layer twos really, really cheap. And another way to phrase that is basically increase the capacity, increase the bandwidth of layer two block space, essentially. Mm-hmm. So this is almost like us getting from the 1990s on the internet to the 2000s. You know, you had dial-up modem or through your phone line. I mean, a lot of people don't remember that, but that's how the internet used to be in the 90s. And then in the 2000s, we started to get high bandwidth systems. You start to get broadband, essentially. And we just did that in Ethereum overnight. Phase one of increasing our broadband. So this is kind of Ethereum's broadband moment, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you're going to experience that not on Ethereum mainnet. It's going to be just as expensive as ever. Fees are not going down ever on Ethereum mainnet. I think we've talked about that so many times before. Well,
we have The Verge, actually.
True. The
we
Verge.
Do have
but
the Verge.
Like, I don't want to get people excited about that. That
they
should not
that
be your
shouldn't
expectations.
Be their expectations.
That's like a 3 to 5 year type thing. But fees are going to get really cheap.
That's a 2025 thing.
Oh my gosh. Well, to stop being so
bullish, David. I'm getting bullish.
Okay. So anyway, what's happened is layer two fees have gone down basically overnight. And so let's talk about them.
Let's go
through it. So this is, what are we looking at? ZK Sync, which was the first layer two to start using this brand new
Congrats
high
to ZK
occupancy.
Sync. First blob on the layer one from ZK Sync. Well done.
Look at the transaction fees falling.
Just going to absolute zero.
So that's how it looks in a chart. But if you're using something like the Argent wallet on Starknet, right, which is another layer two that has adopted a blob space, your transaction fees for doing an in-app swap in your smart contract wallet went from $6.82 overnight to 4 cents for the same transaction.
And Argent is a smart contract wallet. So it actually has generally have more fees. And so like specifically things like Argent and other like smart contract wallets have really been looking for this.
Yes.
4 cents is actually on the higher side of the types of transactions that I've seen. Here is a chart of Optimism of the median gas fee on OP stack chains between OP mainnet, Zora and Base, hovering around like 90 cents. And then now they are dropping down to somewhere between like 1 and 5 cents. Liam from Optimism says, Optimism just enabled 4844 a few minutes ago from 32 cents down to 0.0004 cents for a transaction. That is optimism. Base is also a thing. This even attracted the attention from Brian Armstrong, because Base is also, of course, an OP stack chain. Brian Armstrong says, this is huge. Reducing transaction fees and confirmation times on layer twos will open up so many more use cases for crypto. We are finally getting scalability. He's, of course, retweeting Jesse Pollock's tweet saying, after 2 years of hard work, blobs are now live on Base before 31 cents, after 0 cents. But he actually means 0.0005 cents. The network fee quoted inside of the Coinbase app to get from Ethereum to transfer Ether from Base to Base wallet to Base wallet is 0 cents. So like when Coinbase shows you like, here's a network fee, it's 0 cents. Like imagine the delight of retail users at this point in time.
It's kind of like, why even charge them at that point? It's so cheap, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I went in and looked at this transaction that Jesse was showing, and just like the Ether scan on this is just absolutely hilarious. The transaction fee, 0.00000126 ETH. The gas price, there's too many zeros for me to even read out or count. That's like 9 zeros. The gas price was 0.00000001. That is absolutely insane for a $4 transfer. Zora, it doesn't stop there. Of course, the gas cost to mint on Zora was 61 cents. Now it is 0.0009 ETH. Granted, we are in day one of Blob. Actually, now this is day two of Blobspace consumption. And so we are approaching an equilibrium of all these layer twos leveraging Blobspace. Fees are definitely down across the board. But the blobs are about to go into price discovery.
Because when things get cheaper, when transaction fees get cheaper, you know, we use more transaction fees, mm-hmm. and that can increase the cost of these things mm-hmm. over time. That's what you're saying.
Yes, that is what I'm saying. And we are also seeing activity on layer twos pick up, but also we are approaching, this is a Doom board that we're going to look at from 0x Rob. If you scroll down, you can see a blobs per block. And so blobs actually have a very similar mechanism to EIP-1559, where we are targeting 3 blobs per block. And if we have more than 3 blobs per block, then blobs get more expensive. If you have less than 3 blobs per block, then blobs get less expensive. We are under 3 blobs per block, and we have been since the inception of Blobspace. You want to scroll down a little bit. It's the blobs per block. There we go. So you can see that purple line. We are below the line, the target line of 3 blobs per block. And so this is why blobs are so cheap. As more layer twos leverage Blobspace, we will get this thing called blob contention, which is the fee market for Blobspace. And so then blobs will start to increase the price of blobs because it is congested.
Yes.
And then what do we do after that, Ryan?
We make more blob space.
Oh, yes. Yes. We have to keep making more blob space because we'll never have enough blob space ever.
Correct.
At this point in time. One thing that was really interesting to me, this is a chart of the layer twos, the median price fee over time. And you're right mm-hmm. that most of these are like just now fractions of a penny. And this happened overnight. I was blown away at how fast layer twos actually adopted this.
They were ready.
And they're in
to
a
go.
Competitive game to like mm-hmm. lower their fees as quickly as possible. But like almost all of them did. One outlier is Arbitrum, which I believe may have. Oh, look at this. It spiked down.
They did it 2 hours ago. Yeah. So actually, that's a really important part of the story, actually. So because Arbitrum, they were. Coming in at an 18-hour laggard into the blob space consumption. Why do they take long? Well, A, they have a DAO, so they have to actually get this through a DAO vote.
Sure.
But also, they have this thing called Arb OS Atlas upgrade, which is just a normal like Arbitrum software update for the Arbitrum layer 2 mm-hmm. that also, in addition to leveraging blob space, independently of the lowering gas fees of Blobspace, will also lower gas fees by another 90% just because it's optimizations on the Arbitrum side
That's
of things.
That's so cool.
And so
That's
like so cool. all of the layer twos are able to like squeeze out more juice from their own system. And then they are also getting a 90% gas fee reduction on top of that because of Blobspace.
And that happened
and so
overnight.
I think Arbitrum is actually going to be one of the best tests to how can we really juice these systems? Because now we have Blobspace and Arbitrum is taking their next like additional 90% reduction in gas fees.
It feels like I've called it before, like an economic stimulus in terms of capacity, because it happened mm-hmm. across all chains overnight. And mm-hmm. My timeline was just so wholesome. I'm talking about my social media feeds, right? Of just mm-hmm. people talking about, oh my God, like there was a lot of surprise at how cheap layer two fees actually got. I mean, some of these, I saw somebody tweet out something about Optimism or Zora or something like that being cheaper than Solana at this point.
Oh, that was me.
Oh,
that
was that you, David?
That was me. Yeah.
Oh, you're trying to get some spicy tweets in? I mean,
It wasn't spicy. It was true.
It's factual. It's factual.
A factual tweet.
Yeah.
Ethereum layer twos are cheaper than Solana.
It's really impressive. Now, whether they'll stay that cheap, I don't know, but it's so cool to see it happening in concert across all of the layer twos with this big Ethereum upgrade.
There's a really good tweet thread that I want to read out from Liam.eth, Liam Horn, who talks about the perspective of EIP 4844 is more than just a simple protocol upgrade to Ethereum, because it was a bunch of cross protocol dev coordination across layer twos and the Ethereum layer one protocol. And so there was so many moving parts to make this happen. So I thought this whole entire thread was fantastic. So I'll read through it. EIP 4844 is more than a tech upgrade. It is a substantial shift in how Ethereum core devs work at all, improving the relationship between research and client teams and welcoming layer two core devs. It might be the most important moment in the transition to the rollup centric roadmap.
Wow.
When we started 2 years ago, before the merge, there were tensions between the research and client teams. It wasn't always clear that the ideas on the research side were feasible to implement and took into consideration all the client complexity. This is one of the reasons why Proto Lambda and others conceived of Proto Dank Sharding, which is Pro 4844, which is what we just merged. It was a sort of prototype or an early iteration towards full Dank Sharding that was technically feasible and ready to ship ASAP. ASAP turned into 2 years, but this was even only possible because 4844 was a compromise. It made a massive dent in scalability, future-proofed full Dank Sharding, and took into account client complexity. It forced research, client, and layer two teams to work closely together. One, Optimism made shipping 4844 a top priority and allocated multiple core devs to the effort. Two, Base team started working and contributing to 4844 before the idea of Base was even conceived. Prismatic Labs, three, now part of Off-Chain Labs, that's Arbitrum, evolved into layer two development with 4844 as a gateway. And many, many more examples of the above. 4844 acted as a central project that unified the efforts of so many research, client teams, and layer two devs. It feels like we're in a whole new era compared to 2 years ago. Ethereum is feeling substantially more productive and pragmatic. And with layer two teams now a major part of the mix, the rollup centric roadmap is in full swing. When I read this, I just got goosebumps, because especially with every single major hard fork that we do in Ethereum, I'm just reminded about how we are doing this crazy new thing called decentralized consensus and decentralized governance and decentralized coordination in order to discover the best paths forward that, in my opinion, the Ethereum core devs and researchers all collectively agree and come to consensus on what those are, and then they successfully merge them into the Ethereum protocol.
Absolutely.
And I just get goosebumps that we as humans can even like manage to produce something like that. And so I'll just like take a moment and say thank you to anyone involved with Dankun, EIP 4844, all the other EIPs, and actually like getting this thing into the Ethereum protocol. So many stakeholders needed to be just juggled, and it was done in just, you know, super elegant fashion. So big thank you to everyone getting involved here.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is so popular. Like, everyone loved it. Everyone loves cheaper fees. Everyone loves more bandwidth, more capacity. This was not contentious at all. And it's just a kind of a massive celebration. David, there was also some other upgrades that slipped in the Ethereum upgrade. One is that beacon block routes are now accessible in the EVM. Why is that important?
Yeah, so this is another EIP that was in Dankun that's aside from 4844. I just wanted to call out this one specifically because it's pretty cool. This is beacon block routes are now accessible to the EVM. The beacon block route is a consensus layer thing. The EVM is an execution layer thing. And so we have the beacon chain, and the state of the beacon chain, which is a block route, is now being made accessible to the Ethereum virtual machine, aka the Ethereum application layer, aka DeFi. So Light Clients brings out two exciting use cases: proof of validator behavior, and then efficient O of log proofs for historical block data. Basically, the proof of stake, the internet bond that is Ethereum, the staking and also restaking state of things is being made accessible to Ethereum's own DeFi application layer. And so the actual protocol, and this is really good for Eigenlayer, for AVSs that need to know the state of beacon blocks. So who's got the ETH where, And the AVSs of EigenLayer can now know that. Same thing with like LSTs and LRTs. And so this is just a stronger coupling between the proof of stake layer of Ethereum and the DeFi layer of also of Ethereum. I thought that was worth pulling out.
So I think a big question is we painted this picture of gas fees have gone down for now on layer twos, mm-hmm. but demand is going to increase. And so they will increase in cost as things mm-hmm. go. So where do we go from here? And mm-hmm. there's two kind of categories I want to talk about for further reduction of layer two fees and expansion of the bandwidth of layer twos. One is on the Ethereum upgrade path. I'm going to let you talk about that. But mm-hmm. the other is in parallel to all of this, what's actually happening is the layer twos themselves are improving in their ability to support bandwidth, execution bandwidth, let's call it. And so a few things that are happening. One, of course, we've talked about so much, which is parallelization of the EVMs, right? So of EVMs and also other virtual machines, like the SVM, putting that in a layer two. So we can have a very high throughput layer two that also increases our bandwidth and our TPS. We also have room to maneuver on ZK proving and verification cost decreases. So there's a lot of projects that are specifically working on that that will really help our ZK VMs and our ZK rollups. And then there's also just generally, you mentioned Arbitrum deploying some more called transaction compression, some optimization mm-hmm. in terms of how they're posting data to Ethereum. And so that is ongoing work and will continue to get better. I mean, I think Vitalik said there could be like gains of 3 to 5x just from compression alone. Right. And then everything else is still a bit too expensive. You still need like fractions of a penny. There's third-party DA solutions, you know, one of which mm-hmm. is Celestia, which we've talked about before. But then EigenLayer DA is coming aboard as well, which will be an absolute massive expansion mm-hmm. in terms of data availability bandwidth if Ethereum main chain is getting too expensive. So all of these solutions combined are going to continue to drop gas fees towards zero. Every time it spikes back up, there'll be an improvement and we'll get back down to zero. There's also mainnet improvements coming as well, David. So like, what are the next Ethereum upgrades and hard forks? What are they going to do for bandwidth?
I'll invoke the words of Mike Noyder here. We get 3x in terms of data availability. So blob space, the thing we just shipped, will get 3x larger for the next 3 to 4 years in a row. So we'll get a 3x by just increasing the blob count and gas modifications. We can kind of do that today. We'll get that throughout this year. In 2025, we'll get this thing called peer data availability sampling. And then in 2026, these are all like super hypothetical timelines. When dank sharding comes around, we'll get another 3x. And these are 3x's on top of each other. These aren't like linear 3x's, these are exponential 3x's. And so like gas fees are just dying on layer twos. They're going to zero. It doesn't matter how much induced demand we can get. We can also get more block space to like the logical conclusion. If we can't get there with Mir just adding more data availability, we'll get there with ZK. The conclusion of layer two gas fees is that they go away. They go away for the end user. They are perceived to be zero. They aren't actually zero, but they are so close to zero that the meta will just converge on somebody. Some third party is going to pay for their users' transaction fees because that's a user acquisition strategy. Yep. Gas fees on the layer two are just like in the fullness of time, which is only 3-4 years, going away.
There's
it's going to be a feeling.
I mean,
ecosystem.
Think about the internet, right? You don't pay server fees for using a website or for, you mm-hmm. know, going on X or like doing something mm-hmm. on Facebook, right? You won't pay fees, I think, in the future in these layer twos and layer threes. So, David, we got more to cover, man. We talked a lot about blobs because we're so excited about them, but there's more. What else?
A brand new layer two is coming to mainnet. You thought we were over with innovating on layer twos. You thought wrong. Tensor on Solana dropping a token and Solana's Jito getting rid of its mempool. What's the deal with that? All of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle, the layer two with the highest native staked yield in crypto that you can also get EigenLayer points if you put your METH from Mantle on the Mantle layer two, which is now also 10 times cheaper thanks to blobs. Let's go hear from Mantle right now. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and Liquidity and OnRamps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Uniswap is revolutionizing the DeFi space, not just by enabling swaps, but by empowering you to swap smarter with a comprehensive suite of products for faster, safer, and more informed swapping. Say goodbye to pop-up wallet extensions. The Uniswap extension is coming soon, and this extension is not a pop-up. It is a sidebar in your browser that persists no matter where you are on the web. This means you can swap, sign, or send and receive crypto anytime, anywhere, without obstructing your browser window. But that's not all. The Uniswap web app now features limit orders, so you can buy and sell any token at your price on your terms without having to watch the market. And the best part, limit orders are built on Uniswap X, which means no gas fees. Also new to the web app is the data and insights pages with real-time candlestick charts, price data, transaction logs, and detailed pool data, all integrated into the Uniswap web app. All of these new releases come together to create one platform to help you swap smarter every time, no matter where you are, on web, mobile, or on the extension. Click the link in the show notes to sign up for the extension waitlist and download the mobile app. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC-20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Swell, the LST project that turned into an LRT project when EigenLayer came out, is now building their layer 2 with native restaking yields built in. So we're integrating all of the innovations that 2023 and 2024 have brought us with Swell. Swell's own ZK-EVM from the Polygon Chain Development Kit, built in collaboration with EigenDA, so DA for data availability, and AltLayer as their roll-up as a service provider, along with Chainlink. And so they're getting all of the big players into the Swell layer 2 as well. I think if I'm understanding this correctly, they are taking the Blast playbook and putting in native yield into the Swell layer 2, except this time not just with staking yield, but with restaking yield as well. So like Swell just putting a platypus of a layer 2 together, taking all the innovations that they can from corners of Ethereum.
It's really cool. All this stuff is brand new, right? ZK-EVM, EigenDA is not even out yet. AltLayer is kind of brand new, and then Chainlink and smushing it all together on top of an LRT.
And the gas token is going to be Swell's LRT token, the restaked Swell ETH token.
I think there's going to be a lot of these like kind of vertical stack type plays as well. Yeah. So this came out, we haven't had a chance to really look at it, but do you know the crypto wallet Zurion? They're a fantastic crypto way to see your crypto portfolio. They have a Web3 wallet in your browser as well. They are building a layer 2. And their take on it, their spin on it, is it's going to be zero fees. It's exactly what we were just talking about before the break. Yeah, they're going to subsidize fees. Why? For user acquisition, for onboarding. Right. If it only costs like, tens of thousands of dollars a year, Why wouldn't you just subsidize fees?
Just get the VCs to pay for it.
Server costs. So it, really cool to see Xeron do this. I don't think they'll be the last. I think we will see so many layer twos this cycle of different projects, DeFi projects maybe, like wallet providers, that sort of thing, going and just building a full vertical stack here. So pretty exciting.
Tensor has introduced the Tensor token. Tensor, of course, it's the Blur OpenSea on Solana. And so there is an airdrop for all the Tensorians. Actually, the Tensorians are the people who don the PFPs. But I don't know. If you own the Tensor token, you're maybe a Tensorian too. I'll leave you that up to the Tensorian community. if you have been paying attention to the airdrop hunter from Bankless, that's us. This has been in the airdrop hunter for a long time. So congrats to all the Bankless airdrop hunters who hunted this airdrop.
David, tell me a little bit about Jito. So I saw this and you threw it in the agenda because I think you really wanted to talk about it. And
it's a pretty big deal.
Jito is kind of like a mix between for Solana, for it's kind of like Flashbots a little bit, and it's kind of like Lido. So they do staking for Sol, and they also provide some kind of MEV protection type services and a way to harness that inside of a Solana client. So the news here is Jito Labs had decided to suspend the mempool offered through Jito Block Engine due to negative externalities impacting users on Solana. What the heck does this mean? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so the way that Solana works, Solana does not have a mempool. It has just rolling block construction. So blocks, like transactions are put into blocks as they come in, and then the validator just puts that block into the chain.
And the mempool itself, that's like the holding container for all the transactions that are in queue that have not yet been settled on chain, right? It's just this giant holding container.
Which is where typically blockchains... That's how they're constructed. Bitcoin has a mempool. Ethereum has a mempool. Most blockchains have a mempool. Solana's goal is to move so incredibly fast that transactions just skip over whatever would be a mempool and they just go straight into the chain. Jito needed to make a mempool because Jito is this MEV organization, orchestration, optimization part of Solana, module of Solana, if you will. And so they need to have a mempool because they need people to reorder the transactions. And so there needs to be this like waiting room for... call it like block builders in Solana to like reorder the transactions, take out the MEV because that's the business model, and then give it to the Jito Sol holders, kind of in the same way that like this is basically how Ethereum works. Jito turned off their mempool, which basically means that they turned off their product. They basically turning off all the MEV extraction that would go to Jito Sol holders. So there's not really any difference between holding Jito Sol and holding normally staked Sol, other than that you can use it in DeFi.
Why'd they have to turn it off?
Because they were getting sandwich attacked. And this is a very normal, very expected thing to happen in the MEV world. Like, sandwich attacking is MEV. And what does Jito do? It organizes off-chain MEV so that MEV can get extracted and put into Jito Sol. But there's so much sandwich attacking what's happening that they just decided that this is just a net negative for the Solana ecosystem as a whole. Cause like these aren't like 1 to 3 to 5% sandwich attacks. These are people with like trading bots and Telegram just like not caring about slippage and then getting sniped for like 50-80%. And so they just turned off the mempool because they couldn't get a grip on this MEV that was coming in. I actually learned that Jito has a terms of service that says like, hey, you actually can't front run or sandwich attack.
Oh, wow.
And the sandwich attackers are like, I don't care about your terms of service. And so this is putting like Solana Jito into like this interesting place. This is like MEV what do? Which has been like the big question that Ethereum asks itself when we discovered
it. It's a hard question, isn't it?
So like Solana is in like 2020 Ethereum land when like Phil Diane just discovered MEV. And they're like, all right, what do we do about this? And so like the Jito team are chads, like super technically strong. So I'm interested to see the solution that they come up with. Like, this has kind of been my expectation for the Solana ecosystem. Like, they've always been like, yeah, how do we pay for validators? Like, MEV.
I mean,
like,
the reason they haven't had that before, they haven't had this problem before, is basically there hasn't been enough, like, MEV opportunity. There hasn't been enough, like, upside in terms
actually
of like,
hasn't
block
been any,
ordering.
Like, activity
now
on
there
Solana
is.
Until
a ton
now,
of the meme coin energy is happening on Solana, and I'm sure it's, like, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of MEV opportunity right now.
Right. And so, like, to be clear, the MEV opportunities are still there. they are just like Jito saying like, actually, that's not our problem anymore. There might even be like a legal concern here, because like you don't want to be the thing that's facilitating MEV or sandwich attacks.
They're being pushed back to the valid, like the actual.
Yeah, so they're just going back. It's just going back into the normal Solana layer one validator set. And so like all the validators are getting the MEV, and like the MEV extractors are more efficiently able to extract without that going back.
Well, that
into
doesn't
the
mean it's not a problem. The sandwich attacks
definitely still
have
a problem.
Not gone
in
away.
Fact, it's an even worse problem now.
Now you just can't
it's
see
just
them.
Now it's Solana's problem, not Jito's problem.
Yeah. Well, so I do have some confidence that they will figure this out, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a thorny problem.
It's a thorny problem.
No blockchain ecosystem has figured it out. By the way, Bitcoin's going to have to figure these things out as well.
Wow.
With all of the Bitcoin
Can
layer twos.
Imagine.
Right. There will have to be some, you know, Jito for Bitcoin, some sort of flashbots for Bitcoin. So we'll see how that evolves.
It is currently March. Lucas from Jito is going to be at permissionless. And so I think over the next 6 months, we're going to actually get a lot of clarity as to like how Solana as an ecosystem is going to solve its own MEV problems. I think Lucas is at the spearhead of this whole thing. So since he's at permissionless, I think that's going to be one of the themes of content that me and Mike and the other permissionless content organizers talk about.
There you go, Luke. You have 6 months to work on this. We'll see you in Lucas, Salt Lake in October. Thanks, Lucas. David, did you see this? I'm just going to play the clip.
Michael Saylor clip. Here we go.
He is on MarketWatch, traditional finance media. Here he is.
To be honest, most of the people who are, yes, sure, some people pass it on to their children, but like most of the people who are buying assets at some point want to sell the assets at a profit. So
let me say it a different way.
Okay.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, there's a name for them. We call them poor. Okay. Anybody that's rich in the world, they own property.
Wow, that sounds absolutely terrible. At some level, though, that is classic Michael Saylor. And there's some truth
pretty like
to
decently
it too.
Savage, decently like correct. Like, we don't have to call them poor, but like this has been the thing that you and I have been talking about on Bankless since the inception of Bankless. Fiat currencies and central banks make people who use those fiat currencies poor. That's why the stock market has been up only and savers have been down only since the inception of inception of fiat currencies in the 70s when we went away from the gold standard.
Savings accounts suck.
That's what he's talking about. Savage about it.
Yeah. Anyone who gets any amount of wealth does not hold their money in fiat any longer, right, in dollars or in a bank account, right? They're buying real estate. They're buying stocks. They're buying
like Bitcoin,
traditional store of value type assets, yeah, right? And that's kind of what he's saying. But wow. Putting it so brutally, only Michael Saylor can do that. A few exciting Bankless Ventures raises that we wanted to bring up, both because we're excited about these projects, and also you should know that Bankless Ventures is investing in them. One of which is Eclipse Labs. This is a $50 million Series A, a pretty exciting layer two. What are they building?
Eclipse, we had Neil on forever ago. It is the Solana virtual machine as an Ethereum layer two, using Celestia for data availability and risk zero for ZK proving. It was actually where I got the term platypus layer two. And so other investors include DBA, that's John Charbonneau, Polychain Robot Ventures, but being led by Placeholder and Hack VC, that's Chris Berniski, and also the people over at Hack, along with some angels. Barnaby from the Ethereum Foundation, Austin Federa from the Solana Foundation, Hazu, Eric Wall, DC Investor, Santiago Santos. Pretty cool. It just explains itself. Take the Solana virtual machine that everyone knows and loves, place it as a layer two on Ethereum, make it go
see
even
what
faster
happens.
And be even
cheaper.
Yeah, see
super
what happens.
Cheap.
See what happens.
We also have Click. They raised their $8 million Series A. That's a Bankless Ventures investment. Click is doing a ton of exciting things right now. This is a compute coordination network. I think one big reason why you and I were bullish is they've created this like identity oracle. Right. And you know, on-chain identity has been a thorny problem for crypto to solve. It's been an unsolved problem. But if you're trying to drop an airdrop, if you're trying to incent a community and you want to know who the humans are, who the Sybil resistant unique humans are versus who the bots are and who the farmers are, you need a solution to do that. And Click has this kind of anti-Sybil identity oracle where you can plug in your Web2 profiles and qualify potentially for airdrops. That's just one of like 100 different solutions this team is brewing up. So I'm pretty excited to back those guys as well.
Think about just like all the data that you leave around Web2 in your Spotify account, in your Twitter account, like whatever corners of the internet that you go about, and Click is trying to get that data into just like a useful, composable bit of information inside of Web3. So Web2 data allowing to unlock doors, create doors that could be unlocked inside of Web3.
David, we said we had something for Bankless listeners, Bankless podcast listeners, and it's time to unveil what that is right now. Yes, David, I'm a huge Spotify user. You know,
I'm a big Spotify user.
I think you are too, because I see you on Discord. It's always like, David's listening to Spotify.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're listening to podcasts or what you're listening to, but the news...
I'm listening to the Sheepdogs, let me tell you that.
Awesome. The news this week...
Or lately, the Grateful Dead.
Oh, okay. It's a Grateful Dead for the bull market. Yeah. I'm sure people are excited to hear that. But now the news is the Bankless premium feed is on Spotify officially. So if you are a Bankless citizen, the old way of getting the Bankless feed was using the RSS feed on, you know, plug it into Apple or something. You could still totally do that. You can also get the Bankless premium feed on Spotify. And the premium feed gives you early access to everything we publish here. Also, bonus episodes.
Yep, and of which plenty are coming.
So the way you could think about this is the main public feed is sort of the 100 level content, the 200 level content, and the premium feed also features all of that, ad-free, by the way, and also 300 level content, 400 level content. Yep. And we are publishing more and more to the premium feed this year that I think, like, you know, the casual Bankless fans wouldn't be as interested in, but the deep fans and like the deep crypto journeys
on the frontier. Yeah.
Yep.
With like all this innovation and exploration of the crypto frontier, there will be lots of research episodes, call them research episodes, going on to the premium feed as well. Just some other fun goodies as well. So if you're already a citizen and you want to get this into Spotify, you want to unlock this door, this area is a link in the show notes to get the Spotify premium feed unlocked to you. If you're not a citizen, you can get 15% off, because that's what we're going to give you for our fourth birthday on the podcast. Spotify24 is the code. There is also a link in the show notes to unlock Bankless Premium for 15% off in Spotify.
David, let's get to the meme of the week as we end this. What are we looking at here?
Dad, why is my sister's name Rose?
Because your mother loves roses, son.
Thanks, Dad.
No problem, Blob.
This is a dad with his son. His son is driving. Apparently, the father named his child Blob, which, you know.
It's a great name.
Great name.
Fantastic.
Shout out
to whoever decides to name their kids Blob. Babies get made every single bull market, and at least some of you should name your kids Blob.
Yeah, class of 2024. Babies of 2024, Blob babies. Guys,
we also have a moment of
Zen. This is crazy.
You already heard the clip, but now have you heard the song?
Crypto remix, Michael Saylor. So enjoy that. Guys, got to end with this, of course, some disclosures. Both David and I are investors in Swell. We're also investors in a bunch of the layer twos we named today. You can always see our disclosures at bankless.com/disclosures. Also, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. Not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
What do you do with the Bitcoin besides it just gather value?
Real estate developers in New York City, they're not buying the real estate because they want to live in it.
But like most of the people who are buying assets at some point want to sell the assets at a profit.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor. People that use fiat currency, we call them poor. There's a name for them. We call them poor.
Okay. Right, like the point is if you have the superior asset, it's going up forever, Laura. Forever.
Right, I mean, right, but I mean we can all look Bitcoin sort of as
forever, Laura.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value. We call them poor. People that use fiat
currency. We call them the core. 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 There's a name for it. We call them the core. 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 Okay.